And it says, and Gideon said unto God, if thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said, behold, I will put a fleece of wool on the floor, and if the dew be on the fleece only, and it be dry upon all the earth beside, then shall I know that thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said. And it was so, for he rose up early on the morrow, and thrust the fleece together, and wring the dew out of the fleece, a bowl full of water. And Gideon said unto God, let not thine anger be hot against me, and I will speak but this once. Let me prove, I pray thee, but this once with the fleece, let it now be dry only upon the fleece, and upon all the ground let there be dew. And God did so that night, for it was dry upon the fleece only, and there was dew on all the ground. Many of us have a hard time engaging in certain things unless we have our confidence up. Like, we have a hard time obeying God and the basic things until we're 110% positive. Either it's what we want to do or that we're able to do that. And that is not the biblical model for decision making. There are going to be a lot of things that we are called to do, a lot of things that we're going to be on site for, that we know what God would want us to do, but it's hard for us to do it. In Gideon's case, we see that this is kind of the second time he's trying to test God. All right, Lord, if it's really you and it's really me that you want, do this. Hey, and if it's really you and it's really me that you want, go ahead with this fleece. I'm going to put it out. And if it's wet, but the rest of the ground is dry, I know it's you. And I know that you really want me to do the thing you told me to do. Now, here's the thing. I kind of have that relationship with my kids. You ever have that relationship with your kids? I would like you to go do this, please. And they just sit there. Maybe you are uncertain as to what I meant by that. Right? And I feel like I drive my kids nuts with this. Hey, by pick up your shoes, I meant pick up your shoes. By right now, I meant right now. Right? There's no test. Could you imagine that? I go over to Xander. I say, Xander, listen, what I want you to do is I want you to go out and take the trash out. Just take the trash out of the house. All right, Dad, well, I tell you what, if it's really you and it's really me you want me to take out the trash, I'm going to put my blanket out, and if it's soaked, all right, then I know you want me to take out the trash. That's kind of what Gideon's doing. You told me to do this. I understand you told me to do this, but just to be sure. It's like we always need to be very sure before we do something we know we're supposed to. The fact of the matter is, that's a very childish thought. It's a very basic thing that we should be able to do from childhood. If I tell you to do it, you jump up and do it. My dad, he had a 2-warning system. And he didn't want both of those warnings because he wasn't very faithful to counting to 2. Right? Sometimes it was, all right, when I get home, this, and this needs to be done. There were days where my dad would come home and he would say, all right, it's not all done. You guys need to drop what you're doing and get it done. And then there were days where dad was not having it and it was a spanking on sight. This wasn't done, that wasn't done. We knew dad's expectations. When we know God's expectations, there's no reason for us to play kind of the games that Gideon was playing here. Where either it was from his fear, his uncertainty, or he was having fun at seeing God move. I don't know. But he wasn't in obedience here. All right, one of the key elements of obedience is what? Do it immediately. Don't question it. I used to do that to my mom, and I'm not going to tell her that because I'm starting to get that a little bit now myself. Matt, I want you to do this. Are you sure you want me to do that? Because if I do that, this will happen. And I was going to go over here and do this. Are you sure that's what you want? Because this is... That drove her nuts. Will you just do what I told you to do right now? And that's all she wanted. That and the last word. That's all she wanted was for me to do what she told me to do and me not to talk about it while I did it. Right? And that's what God expects out of us. And Gideon was just not doing it. Now me, I like being direct. I don't always get a good response to it, but I like when people are direct with me, and I like to be direct with other people. If we put too much into a problem, it can become more complicated than it really is or needs to be. Gideon brought doubt, God cut through it. Gideon brought 32,000 soldiers. God decimated that number. We know that you can't play games with God because we can't win. Now, there's a correlation here. Now, Gideon tested God twice. Now, I know that there's probably a more theologically sound way of putting it, but God messed with Gideon twice. He did. Now, as we read through chapter 7, verse 1, it says, "And Gideon said, then Jerubbaal, who is Gideon, and all the people that were with him rose up early and pitched beside the well of Herod, so that the host of the Midianites were on the north side of them by the hill of Morah in the valley. And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me." And I hate to try to think for God or talk for God in ways that he doesn't say, but I'm kind of reading too much into this, right? This is what I read out of this. See, I can't give you 32,000, because then you wouldn't know it's me. You needed to know it was me with fleece number one. You needed to know it was me with on the second night of the fleece. Well, 32,000, you won't know it's me. So we got to bring these numbers down a little bit. That's too many. And we see there a test. The title of tonight's message is Man versus Battle Testing. And the very first test that we see here, where we eliminate 22,000 people in the army here. There's 22,000 people that are about to go home. That is the majority. It is almost a joke. If I had to choose between the 22,000 and the 10,000 that went home, I would have been clinging to the 22,000. If I was Gideon, my heart would be shaking, right? I needed two nights with fleece in order to get comfortable to come here, and you just took 22,000 people away. Well, what's the test? Many of you know. Verse 3, "Now therefore go to proclaim in the ears of the people, saying, whosoever is fearful and afraid, let him return and depart early from Mount Gilead. And there returned of the people 22,000, and there remained 10,000. Could you imagine that in the military setting? Big old battle about to happen. Here's Gideon with his knees knocking. God says, if you're afraid, you can go home. We kind of have a scenario like that right now, don't we? If you can make unemployment, just stay home. Right? Now you can't get a shake over at McDonald's because nobody's there. Right? If you're afraid, go home. Everyone's afraid, aren't they? 22,000 people, hey, if you feel fear, go home. And 22,000 people said, well, thank you for the excuse. I guess I'll go home. There are many Christians today that we wouldn't necessarily maybe call Christians who are just staying home. They're more than happy to get out of church. There was a conversation said in the Southern Baptist Convention. Now, don't hold a lot of water in the Southern Baptist Convention, but this is where the best kind of illustration of this would be. They said between the years of 2019 and 2020, the end of 2020, they lost almost 1 million members from their coalition there. Now, not churches, individual people. Now, while I completely disagree with the idea of a convention-style church, I believe that independent church is the way to go, that's telling. Why? Because this doesn't sound very nice, but I think you know that I'm going to say something not nice every now and then. I don't believe the bulk majority of the people in that movement are saved. It happens with Arminian doctrine. If I pull two of my kids aside and I start trying to convince them of salvation, guess what's eventually going to happen? They'll say it just to make me happy. Right? So if I'm doing that to my kids and I'm doing that to my neighbors and I'm doing that over here and they come and they're like, wow, what a great social club. Wow, what a great experience to be able to come in and oh, look at what they've got on the stage and oh, look, I love having potlucks and they kind of get caught up in there. Well, 1 million people are walked out. Why? Because their belief in the Lord was not stronger than their fear, their doubt, or their unbelief. The relationship wasn't there. When we see that, we see very much the same as what Gideon saw as he looked at the back of 22,000 people. As 22,000 soldiers picked up their stuff and went home, That's what a lot of churches are looking at. What happened to brother so-and-so that came to the church for the longest time? Did they, did they move? Did whatever happen? I know they just stopped coming, and now they're, now they just sit at home and they golf a little bit on a Sunday, but they don't go to church anymore. How does that happen? How does it happen that we can just be members of churches or come to church for a long period of time and just leave? I'll tell you this, for as much as my experience is, and there are rare occasions where I'm wrong, most of the time it's not the preacher. Most of the time it's not the rest of the church. The bulk majority of the time when people leave church, it's a problem right here. It's a heart problem. Now, are there scoundrels out there pretending to be preachers who chase people away? Yes, there are. Are there churches where the environment is so rough to get along with that it leads people away? Absolutely. Majority of the time, though, it's right here. It's my sin. It's my attitude. It's my relationship with the Lord. Maybe I came in, I got caught up for a little bit. At Flat Rock, we had this young couple come in, and it was the weirdest thing. Nobody ever knocked on their door. Nobody ever met them. Nobody knew who they were. Young, very young, 20-something couple, not married, just came, started visiting us. And we thought that was so cool. Well, one of them saved and became a member. Well, that is very neat. We're having a good time with that. Nobody went to go get them. Nobody invited them. Here they are. And look, now the Lord saved one of them, and we're baptizing them. And hey, isn't that amazing? Isn't that great? Well, they were only there for about 3 or 4 months before they stopped coming. And they cut off all contact from us. Now, there are some people that are in the church that are still friends with them on Facebook, but there's no communication back and forth. What happened? Did we have a big fight in the church? No. Did somebody say anything ugly? No. What was it? The relationship they had with the Lord was experimental. That's right. It wasn't strong enough. Folks, I've been there when being a member of the church, when I felt left out. I've been a member of a church when I felt insulted at times. Right? There was a guy down in Cincinnati when I was a member down at the church down there. I think I told you about this. We had about 7 members in the church. Most of them were aged about how we've got right here in home church, right? And the reason why he pulled him and his wife out of the church is because the church didn't have a softball team. Had the nerve, the absolute nerve to come to me. We were in church, came up to the dorm room to talk to me about how awful our pastor is for not entertaining the idea. We had a guy there, he weighed 400 pounds. His knee was in a brace. We had a member who was in a wheelchair. We had a member who was in the military for so long, by the time he got out of it, there wasn't much of his body left. Right? If it rained, we were carrying him into the church. Well, I just think it's wrong. And you know what? If you're going to back him on this, I don't agree with that. I'm going to say some things. I'm going to get people to think some things. Just came right out on it. Didn't even play cards with me. Just dealt it open. Just, I'm going to say this, and I'm going to say that. And it, whoa. Why? Because he was angry. Did I leave the church? Did I quit the school? I said, you know, I can't do this anymore. If this is how... No. Why? Because my being there had more to do with my relationship with God than it did that man. You know what I mean? There was no reason for me to back down. A lot of people, they're seeing that. The very first test. Do you want to go? Oh yeah, thanks for the excuse. I'll go. Right? Well, it seems like social media doesn't seem to like church so much anymore. And it seems like some of the things that my church preaches isn't as popular anymore. I gotta get out of here. Well, alright, we'll go. There are many people, they are afraid. So they're holding back. They're staying quiet. They're not willing to put in the work that has always been done in the Lord's true churches. 22,000 without any form of regret that we can read in scriptures turned around and walked away. And you know what I'll say? I'll say this. We didn't need that 22,000. Gideon didn't need it. We don't need those that do not have a proper relationship with the Lord. Well, yeah, brother. Amen. Absolutely. So, and I think I even know what you're talking about. You don't. I'm talking about you. You better not be fearful. You better be just as strong. The moment you get an excuse to get out of here, will you take it? You better not. And guess what? That attitude, that behavior doesn't come accidentally. You got to prepare for that. Better men and women than you and I have left churches because of something like this. Fear, distraction, self-respect or self-worship, whatever you want to call it. They bailed out. Right? Don't be that person. When the Lord asks, hey, if you're afraid, get out. Be that person to trust the Lord. And say, you know what? I'm a little excited about this. I'm a little nervous about this. There is a little bit of trepidation, right? We are walking into a battle, but I trust the Lord's going to have our back. Let's go. I've crossed that bridge many a time with the Lord where I'm risking something and I'm throwing something away or putting something off. You know, we were talking about vacation time. You know what this year would have been for me? This year would have been the year I could take off any week I wanted at work. I had priority, right? You ever had that when you were working where you have to sit there and fight over what week you got off? Now, here's the thing. I know that y'all don't watch me punch a time clock in or out. I know that. But just, this is how bad I am as a person, right? Just to be able to dominate the list was what I wanted. To have that one time where I scheduled a week off. Oh, well, I wanted that week off. Oh, well, let's check to see who's got seniority. Oh, wait, nope, I'm your boss. I got it. That's all I wanted, just one time. That's a horrible thing. Don't have that attitude. That was a joke. Mostly. I've given up some serious things when it went down to going down to Cincinnati. Right? When it came down to what I was going to do in the future. One of the many things that some of the older preachers and pastors in my life encouraged me is don't go into serving ministry with a plan B. And what that meant was don't go to college for one thing, knowing full well the Lord's going to call you out and put you into something else. Go full-time into it. I gave up scholarships for that because I knew the calling of my life at that point. Now, I've got a buddy. The Lord called him to preach 5 years into his career. I kind of chuckled at that until he paid off all of his student loans in that same period of time, and now he can go do whatever he wants. That's how God works. Sometimes you got to cross bridges that you know you can't go back over. And you don't always get to see how God's going to work that out until you get there. For 22,000, the bulk majority of the people that showed up for battle, 22,000 gone. Just gone. Don't be the ones who are afraid and walk out because you're more concerned about your hide and your full belly than you are the service to the Lord. I get this one too. No one wants to hear me. Can we have a pity party for a second? We're going to have a pity party, Glenda. Did you bring the hats? I was talking to my friend, and they were talking about, you know, it's preaching. And I said, you know what the hardest thing was for me on Sunday? It wasn't the fatigue. It wasn't the large amount of not healthy food that I ate. It was knowing that I'd have to get up here knowing better preachers had touched my pulpit. You know what I mean? That got to me a little bit. So then after that, no one's gonna want me up there after Brother Farmer. No one's gonna. And I just after this, I just went through the whole thing that the devil wants you to do that God tells you not to do. Don't do that stuff. Don't play games like that. Well, no kid's gonna want to hear me teach a Sunday school class. I remember I told you about Brother Gil. Brother Gil, who taught a class of just one knucklehead. He was not a great teacher. He didn't do funny voices. There were no puppets in my Sunday school class. Nothing. Just Bible. And I learned. And I'm grateful. All he brought was a love for me and the Bible. That was it. And that was all I needed. You understand that? How powerful that is? Well, no new Christian is going to want to hear me talk about the Bible and go through a bunch of lessons with them. You know what? It's not about you. It's not. If I sat in that office until I felt like I was capable of coming out here, you wouldn't see me. We need to get over it. We need to step up and do the things that God has commanded us to do. Now, of course, there's always restrictions to it, right? Health, body, time, those things happen. But what I can show up for, I show up for. If whatever the Lord puts in my life to interrupt or just disrupt my ability to do certain things, fear and self-worship cannot be one of them. Right? Have a teacher break their leg. What do? Well, they wait for that leg to heal so they can get back into the classroom. And at particular points, they could do more and they could do more and they could do more. All right? Whatever took them out of service, it wasn't fear and it wasn't self-worship. Right? You know, in many particular cases, sometimes entire life schedules change. And that makes sense. And what doesn't make sense? Well, no one's going to want to hear me. Get over it. Come on, Moses. Come on, Jeremiah. Let's not talk about how well you talk. Let's get into the ministry. So what happens next? 22,000 people, they beat it. They go home. Verse 4, and the Lord said unto Gideon, the people are yet too many. Bring them down unto the water, and I will try them for thee there. And it shall be that of whom I say unto thee, this shall go with thee, the same shall go with thee. And of whosoever I say unto thee, this shall not go with thee, the same shall not go. So he brought down the people unto the water, and the Lord said unto Gideon, everyone that lappeth of the water with his tongue, as a dog lappeth, him shalt thou set by himself. Likewise, everyone that boweth down upon his knees to drink. And the number of them that lapped, putting their hand to their mouth, were 300 men. But all the rest of the people bowed down upon their knees to drink water. And the Lord said unto Gideon, by the 300 men that lapped will I save you and deliver the Midianites into thine hand, and let all the other people go, every man unto his place. This is a very curious thing. I put this right up here with the walls of Jericho, just the kind of the mindset of God. It gives us a little bit of a glimpse as to who he is. Now, I've heard this described different ways, but this is what I think happened. I see a group of people, around 9,700, getting down on their knees, putting their face to the water to drink it. And I see 300 people picking the water up and just blah, blah, blah. Now, that both look ridiculous. If I'm Gideon, that doesn't make any sense. You know what I would do? Just get you a cup down there. Something to drink out of. But by the divine intervention of God, everybody had a thought, I needed to stick my face up to this water, get down on my knees and stick my face into this water, or I pull it up to my face and now the lapping part is important. All right, follow me on this. If I'm, so we'll go back to the first one. If I'm down on my knees, right? As a matter of fact, let me do this. I keep picking on my kids a lot. Xander, come here. And Charlie, yeah, you look ready. Come here, Charlie. Not you, Charlie. That Charlie. That. The fun one. All right, Xander, I want you to get down on your knees and face everybody over here. Now, I want you to, the ground's water, right? It's like the floor is lava, but the floor is water. I want you to get drinks out of the ground. And Charlie, I want you to do what I described, where you just kind of bend down and get some water and blah, blah, blah. Can you do that? Mm-hmm. Go for it. Let's prove it. And blah, blah, blah. That's right. Now, you've got the 300. Get some water, guys. This doesn't work if you're staring at me. Right? You got the 300, blah, 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 and you've got the 9,700 doing something like this now. Were they washing the water up to their face? All we know is that they were bowed down and they were face in the water. Now, if my face is in the water, can I see the enemy coming at me? What particular activity are we about to participate in? War. It's not a good time for you to be sitting there, feet in the mud. Not a good time for that. Now this guy, come on, guys, I'm paying for this. Come on, right? And he's more ready, isn't he? Now how about this? How would you drink water? If you had a handful of water, how would you drink it? You'd go like this, right? You wouldn't go, you wouldn't, because you're not a dog, right? You just, and up you'd go. Why is that a bad idea? Because even for a split second, you're not watching. For the long, you're so caught up in yourself and taking care of yourself, you're not watching. This is just long enough for you to miss an archer. This is just long enough for you to miss out on something going on around you. Whatever it was, there was a split second decision there that you're handicapping yourself, right? So if I come over and, hey, he's done. He's ready to go. Thank you for trusting me and not running. Go have a seat. You understand that? There's a difference there. One of them was like, all right, and they're watchful. The other is so wrapped up in taking care of themselves, they miss out on what they're actually doing. What is it that we have to do on a regular basis, right? You do your house chores. You do your job. Maybe you're retired. You do some chores around the house. Whatever it is you've got a list of things to take care of yourself, right? If I don't do this, I won't have that. So we do things to keep the housing and the financing and our homes and our families. We do things to keep those wheels turning. Right, those people that went down to get a drink of water, they were fulfilling a biological necessity. Drink some water. How we do those things matters. Now listen, we all have the need, right? One of the things that I would struggle with is I used to work some long hours. To the point where I'd begin to think that it was kind of a bit of a sinful thing. There was a reason I've only ever been to this conference once. Oh, I can't, I got work. They have a conference up in Traverse City. I gotta work. I'd have to arm wrestle 5 or 6 people just to get the Flat Rock conference off of work. We had one conference where I was there. It was on Saturday. I had to go right after the conference. Most of the church is sitting there working. I had to run back to there because of some kind of water emergency they had. I put too much in the wrong thing. Right? I'm telling on myself left and right. I told you I was up to like 4 a.m. last night. Telling on myself left and right. That was a problem. While I did the necessities, I put too much emphasis on the money. Put too much emphasis, well, brother, you're supposed to work. You're supposed to take care of your family. Absolutely, but there's a line. There's a line there. My number one priority is right here in this house. Whether I'm the pastor, a teacher, a church member, doesn't matter. As a church member, my responsibility is to the Great Commission first. Now, part of honoring God is also taking care of my family. So what's more important, God or family? God doesn't make you choose. In order to serve Him, you need to be a good steward of your family. Right? They're all in the same hand. Right? So to obey Him, I have to take care of my family. We put too much into those things. I've known people that completely lost their children's childhood. They don't have the memories of those things because they needed the boat and the vacations and the overseas trips and the cruises. And they had to go on vacation 7 or 8 times out of the year. Right? They had to do all that. Now listen, there's nothing wrong with those things. As a matter of fact, if I'm looking at you and you don't take a break every now and then, I'm going to say something. Right? I expect you to take care of your bodies and have some family time and enjoy that sort of thing. Right? But it's when it happens too much. Right? When you're missing half of the church services because you're out playing around or you're out getting that overtime and there's issues there. Right? Then we're looking at a problem. You're not taking care of the main thing. You're these people with your head fully in the water just and you're not paying attention to the dangers. See, what they did, the 22,000, they failed out because of fear. The 9,700, they fell out because of senselessness. There was a brain problem. There was a serious problem here. They were making themselves unawares. And that is a very fatal issue for Christians today. It's a carelessness that takes us out. Blind to what's really going on. And you even see this to where some folks just flat out ignore logic. You know what I'd be afraid of? Would you go to the Middle East with me and put your face in the water in the Middle East? Get some of that water? Many of us, we grew up with nice, clean water. Water you can see through. Water that's been cleaned multiple times and ran through filter after filter. You wouldn't put your face in there. Other than the fact of what might be swimming in the water, you know what I'm worried about? What lives in the water? Come out and get me. I'm also should be concerned about who's around me. Again, there's an army that's going to see that we've got 32,000 people over here that has probably caught our attention. You can't get 32,000 people together without catching someone's attention. Someone knows we're here, right? It's carelessness. You know, I preach on certain things, certain ways you're supposed to take care of your life, and certain things you're not supposed to be bringing in, the music you listen to, the stuff you watch on TV, the stuff you entertain yourself, the people you're around. I preach on those things and preach on those things. And sometimes in the Baptist churches, that falls on a deaf ear. Why? Because I'm going to keep doing what I've always been doing, and there ain't no problem with it, and so does it. And we put ourselves in unnecessary risk. It's a danger. And what we want is the best case scenario. Don't we? Don't we want the best case scenario? Right? Gunnell's about to go on vacation. Don't you want the best case scenario? No flat tires. Every time you stop for food, it's there. You know, we have desires we want to see in things. Well, you can't have the best case scenario unless you put your best foot forward, right? You got to plan those things out. You got to put effort into them. So I want to make sure that there are no problems. I want to get away from a senseless type of thinking. I heard this story, an Afghan Taliban commander. the officials were baffled by this guy who gave himself up and then tried to claim the $100 reward for his captor, for his captive. You know how they do that? $100 if you get, for information, leads us to arresting this guy. And he shows up going, it's me, $100. And I laughed at that. That is, there's something wrong. Like, how do you get to where you were? I mean, he wasn't a high ranking. He was a mid-range Taliban commander. How do you get there with that level of stupidity on board? But nonetheless, he got there. Must have been married to somebody or somebody owed him a favor. But this absolute dummy. It's me, $100. And he even had the nerve to fight them for not giving him the money. Right? We do this with the devil all the time. Right? He's trying to entice us with things. He's trying to tempt us with things. And we're the ones sitting there going, hey, it's me. Gimme, gimme, gimme. Right? Hey, this acceptance. Hey, this good feeling, this good time that you've promised. I'm here. Give it to me. And then we get just completely boggled by the fact that it doesn't work. We don't do the things we know we're supposed to in a very senseless and horrible way. Right? Hey, do you guys pray as a family? Why, you know, we every now and then, but, all right, Porky Pig, I'm assuming you don't. Right? Because you're stuttering at me. All right, well then don't come and ask, why is this going on with my kids? Why is this going on between me and my spouse? Right? I had somebody there sitting there, we were talking about how bad of a day they were having. And I said, well, I got off of work and on my way to work, this happened. When I got to work, this happened. And then my boss yelled at me for something I didn't even do. And the story went on and on and on. So, whew, I go, if you knew about that before you started the day, you probably would have prayed a little bit longer. He goes, oops. Because there it is. He hung up on me. Not because he was mad. He called me back later. He goes, I wasn't going to finish the conversation until I prayed. I laughed. We're looking at the answer. We're goofing off on it. Right? How many of us do that? If I ask basic Bible doctrine questions, you've got it. If I ask questions about separation, how to stay out of sin, blah, 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 blah. Yes, brother, absolutely. I know exactly what that's like. All right, well, let me come on over and search every corner of your house. Oh, hey, why don't you... Right? There's a problem with that. Again, you think you're hiding it from me. It's the Lord you're hiding it from. And ultimately, it doesn't matter where you hide the poison. If you're taking it, you're dead. Right? It's not about hiding the poison. If it's in your body, you're in trouble. We get reckless on things. And that's what these people who are just in the face, they're being reckless about it. What was more needed were these people who were cautious. Now, I told you I'd get here. Here I am. They're being cautious. They're watchful. I'm watching to see what's going on. Right? My pastor used to have this saying, and some people didn't like it. They would kind of grumble at this. If it's doubtful, it's dirty. Well, how narrow-minded does that sound? That sound horrible? If it's doubtful, it's dirty. If I don't know whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I'm not going to go. We used to play that game with restaurants. You go up to a restaurant. Okay, is it a bar or is it a restaurant? We had this conversation among some of us at one particular time over at Flat Rock. Applebee's. Can I go to Applebee's? It's got a visible bar. Is it more? Is it that I can't go into it because it's more bar than restaurant? Can I go into it if it just serves alcohol but there's no bar? Right, we talk about those things, and that's an okay conversation to get into, right? Well, if it's doubtful, get out. Right, there are whole restaurants I'd like to try around here. Well, because it says bar and grill, or it says tavern, I don't go in. Well, you're missing the best burger. And you know what? I'll never know. I think birds sometimes look at us and go, how do they walk around all day and not fly? We don't know. We don't know what we're missing. And you know what? I'm more than happy to not know what I'm missing than to get into a situation. I was talking to my cousin just recently. She was one of the ones that came up to visit us. And, you know, for me, I know very clear reasons why I don't drink, and we share them. You know why she told me she doesn't drink? Because she comes from a family that likes to drink. And that's a quote from the Civil War. Why don't you use tobacco? I think I might like it, but I might like it too much. Right? Not exactly a biblical reason, but it's a perfectly good one. Well, you don't understand. You know what? That's how you unwind, and that's how you relax. But it's a dangerous thing that I'm not going to mess with, so not having it. And people stand up against that. They don't like the idea of if it's doubtful, it's dirty. But you know what? I would much rather not fall into a trap than to play around with it. I gave you an illustration just recently of my papa and I. My papa ran down a hill and woke up a big old nest in the ground of yellow jackets or whatever they were. And who ran down after him? Me. He's covered in them. I'm completely covered in them. Right? You know what I never did again? I never ran down a random hill covered in leaves. I never ran down anywhere I couldn't see. Just every time we were up there, I had to see all the way down. I took it careful. If I knew it was safe, I'd run. If I didn't know the area, I wouldn't run. Many of you go out hunting. You don't go running through the woods. You'll scare what you're looking for. But more importantly, you'll turn your ankle on something you didn't see. We need to have that same care and concern in our spiritual walk as much as we do as when we're walking out in the woods or as we're doing anything else, to actively protect myself from anything going on around me. To be reckless is to expose yourself to enemies. It's to expose yourself to certain dangers. Now, some people will come back at me and they'll say, yeah, but I'm tough enough. Can I tell you this? Believe me when I say this, you're not. You're not. There's not a sin in your life if the devil took enough time, he couldn't tempt you into. Now, God is good with his grace and his mercy and his strength. There would be a battle for it, but if he wouldn't start just by having you rob a bank. It would be by getting you out of church. It wouldn't just be by getting you out of church. It'd be by getting you to stop paying attention or stop coming as often. It's a progress that he would make in your life, and you'd be tempted to do it. So you know what? The best thing to do is to not go down that slippery slope, not mess around on the edge. Those people who are cautious, not terrified. Remember, all the scaredy people left. We're not talking about people who are afraid of life. We're talking about people who are cautious. They're mindful. They're watching for the archers. They're watching for the spies to be walking around in the woods. All right, those people, they're aware of just how dangerous the enemy is, and they're careful of it. Now, we see that in this group, 22,000 bailed out of fear. The 9,700 bailed out of senselessness, foolishness. But if we go back to chapter 6, verse 36, we see someone who passed their test with flying colors. We read through verse 36, but join me in chapter 7, verse 2, and it says, "And the Lord said unto Gideon, the people that are with thee are too many for me to give the Midianites into their hands, lest Israel vaunt themselves against me, saying, mine own hand hath saved me." See, God, he wasn't part of the 22,000. He wasn't afraid. God wasn't a part of the senseless. He's all-knowing. God's also all-powerful. He wanted to make it crystal clear to the children of Israel, as he so often did, that this salvation came from me. We can't take the risks we want to take in spiritual battle and expect them to always go in our favor. We can't do things in our own might and in our own mindset. There are too many people out there trying to mix their philosophy with biblical philosophy and expecting to make something good out of it. You can't. There was a guy in our class who took, at Flat Rock, we had a really cool CAD shop, and there was kind of like a neat little, I don't know how to put it, but for those who are going into trades work, there was different schools that had different labs set up to do that. So if you wanted to learn carpentry, you could. You wanted to learn welding, you could. CAD work was at our school. So downriver, there was different schools that had different things that would teach you a skilled trade, and you just get on a bus and you would go. And there was this kid who, for his final presentation, wanted to do a project, and his idea is that he would get a good grade if he could find a way to create something that welded together both metal and wood. Two items that are notoriously difficult to put together in the same instrument. Right? Now I can use metal and wood together, but I can't fuse them together like that. He used different glues and welds. And I think what he ultimately tried to do is JB weld the thing to the other thing. I can't even remember what he looked. It was a monstrosity. It didn't even make it onto the bus. We are all kind of chuckling at it. None of that worked. None of it was sensible. None of it made any sense whatsoever. He was trying to combine two different elements into one thing, and it just doesn't. I go, well, have you thought about bolting it? I don't want it to bolt together. I want it to be fused together. Okay, well, what about, I mean, there's got to be some way to do it other than that. You can either do one or the other and combine, but you can't. And that's what we try to do. Hey, how can I go to church on Sunday and be seen as a spiritual person, but I also want to talk like this? I also want to tell these kind of jokes. I also kind of want to entertain myself this way. You can't mix them together. They don't mix that way. It just doesn't work out. We can't be reckless and expect us to pass it. We cannot turn down God and expect it to work. If it would have worked on its own, God would have left them alone. But it's God's strength we need. It's His word, it's His will, it's His explanation of things that we require. We're at the point, because we had this kind of a social reckoning almost 100 years ago, and we're at the point now where we're really beginning to see, at least I think the world is, we've seen it for a while, that it's not working. It's not. Oh, don't spank your kids, don't do this, don't do that, and social projects and things like that that they were doing. And they realized they put all this effort into things, and it's not working. Africa tried this thing in the last few years where what they would do is they'd have donations come in, and instead of working on the infrastructure of the environment, right, building roads and aquifers and things like that, that they would just give it to people. Just give them the money. And you know what happened? Now, from the humanist point of view, I would take the money and I would invest it into my community myself. I would invest it into my business and things would go great. You know what the biggest problem they had was? People were wasting the money. They were buying food and they were buying toys. They were buying things they didn't need. Right? And every now and then you'd go into a village, and what they would do is you'd go through a village, you'd see one guy put a metal roof on his house. And they were talking about this. They'd go on for a long length in this report that they were doing on this whole project. And what they ultimately concluded was just giving the people the money and expecting them to do the right thing with it didn't work. Now why? Why wouldn't we just do the right thing and build roads and make water accessible and do all the things we know that we're supposed to do? Because we needed this humanist experiment to work to prove that man in and of himself is good. We're not. We talk a lot. We kind of joke a lot about diets because I like to be the one Baptist preacher who talks about food. How many of you were trying to watch what you were eating in the last couple weeks? How many of you blew it at the conference? Well, Charlie actually raised his hand. I'll be with you. I did. Threw that right away. Sick as a dog on Monday morning. Just disgustingly not feeling well. Why? Because I messed up. Left to my own devices, I messed up. Given an excuse, I messed up. How strong are you on your spiritual standing? Right? If I can't handle the things when I know you're watching me, What struggles am I going to have when there's no one watching me? And that's the question you have to ask yourself. If I'm like this, when people can catch me, what am I really at heart? If I think there's nobody watching me, that's your integrity. That's the strength of your character. That needs to be wrapped up in who God is for you to make any ground or headway. Yes, you are saved, but that doesn't stop you from being a sinner. You need to rely on Him. When it came down to handling a little bit of fleece, God could take care of it. That was no problem at all. When it came down to being able to handle Gideon's heart, making sure that he had Gideon on board. All right, Gideon, I'll do this with the fleece. I'll make it damp and I'll bring it out. There's a whole bucket full of water. All right, Gideon, you want it dry? I'll make it dry and everything around it soaking wet. I'll do anything. He was dealing with Gideon. You know, there are times where God does things in your life that don't necessarily hurt or help Him. It's there to help you, to get you on board, to get you on track, to help clean you up a little bit. There are things that you're going to be exposed to, things that will happen in your life that will make you strong enough. And we were talking about that. There are times where my wife and I, we were hurting. And there was something that just tore us up. And a church member who went through the exact same thing, looked at us, knew exactly what was going on, came over, put their arm around me and gave me some advice. And you know what I've always looked to do? Turn around and do the exact same thing. Now here's the thing. Was God trying to reach them and the side effect was them being able to reach me? Or did God reach them to reach me so I could reach somebody else that needed it? I don't know. Maybe He's just setting up a chain. I like to think it more like that. Where we're developing this ability to help each other. He's strengthening the support system. And sometimes you got to put a hole in something so you can run a support through it. And maybe that's all it is. Where God's working on you, He's caused something in your life so that you can strengthen somebody else. That's from Him. Trust in Him on that. You know what? God also knows how to win. Having designed most of the things that go on around us, God is the one who can. God can handle your problems. 2 Corinthians 12 verse 10 says, therefore I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses, for Christ's sake, for when I am weak, then am I strong. At my weakest, in Christ, I'm the strongest I can be. Because here's the thing, when I'm strong, and I think I've got things figured out, that's when I make the most mess, don't I? How about you? Is that... I got this all figured out. I'm sorry. That's when we make a fool out of ourselves. It's when I'm fully looking to God to see what needs to happen, that's when I'm at my best. Whether it's the work that we're doing directly or in the day-to-day actions of our lives, God can handle your problems. He handled Gideon's doubt real quick. He can do the same for you. And God can handle problems bigger than you. Romans 8:31 says, what shall we then say to these things? If God be for us, who can be against us? He that spared not His own Son, but delivered Him up for us all, how shall He not with Him also freely give us all things? Who shall lay anything to the charge of God's elect? It is God that justifieth. Who is he that condemneth? It is Christ that died, yea, rather, that is risen again, who is even at the right hand of God, who also maketh intercession for us. Who shall separate us from the love of Christ? Shall tribulation, or distress, or persecution, or famine, or nakedness, or peril, or sword? As it is written, for thy sake we are killed all the day long. We are accounted as sheep for the slaughter. Nay, in all these things we are more than conquerors through Him that loved us. For I am persuaded that neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor powers, nor things present, nor things to come, nor height, nor depth, nor any other creature shall be able to separate us from the love of God, which is in Christ Jesus our Lord. Amen. There ain't nothing. Gideon had his doubts, he had his concerns, and at the end of it all, God gave him not but 300 people. I don't have enough. There's not much I can do. And I got to supplement. And I got to do this. And I got to... No, you don't. You march into battle with what God gave you. You rely on the supplies that God gives, the help that He gives, and you do things His way. And you will be battle ready. For the big things, for the small things, you'll be ready when you find yourself ready for God's, when you find yourself passing God's tests. Did you pray this morning? That was a test. Did you read your Bible today? That's a test. Right? That's the study time. That's how you prepare for it. What fool goes into an exam? They're not studied. Aren't you glad life is an open book test? It is. As a matter of fact, God, who is our great teacher, imposes on us to have the book open while we're taking this test. We've got all the things we need to pass. Don't balk at having 300. Don't get caught up in some silliness like, well, Lord, prove to me this or that. Just show up on the day you're supposed to and take care of that business. Let's pray.